And you're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. It's 8:19. Joining me right now on the phone lines, we're talking to a U.S. Representative Rick Crawford here on KASU with the monthly congressional interview. Mr. Crawford, thanks for joining us, and Happy New Year to you.
You bet.
Appreciate
you. Yeah, you too.
So let's talk a little bit about, before we talk about the shutdown and those things, I kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit about 2019 and kind of your thoughts on this new year and your goals and things that you're wanting to accomplish in 2019.
Well, you know, obviously there's been a lot of attention paid to what's going on with the current situation with the shutdown and stuff, but I would encourage people to take heart. It's not all bad. There's some opportunities to do some things that are particularly productive for Arkansas. One of those things is in this new Congress, there's a real appetite for the Cuba Ag Trade Bill that I've been working on for, I don't know, the last four or five Congresses. So this is something, since I've gotten there, I've been working on this issue and have made some progress. There's some provisions in the Farm Bill that support this, but without the actual statutory changes, the provisions in the Farm Bill probably won't really amount to much. And so I think people recognize that and understand that if we're going to have any value in those provisions, then we need to go on ahead and change the law that allows for U.S. entities to extend credit to Cuban entities. And it's not unlike any other relationship we have with any other country. And, you know, it's just, you know, the reason, the impediment to this has been, you know, the political posture with Cuba for the last 60 years. But this is an easy thing to change. It's not going to fix everything that ails agriculture. But when you have an important sector like ag that's been struggling for, you know, the last 6 or 7 years, and net farm income has declined more than 50% over that period, they're looking for every opportunity they can to expand market access. And this is one of those opportunities. So I think we actually do have a very realistic shot of seeing that legislation move in the House. And over on the Senate side, Senator Bozeman has the companion piece, and he's got 77 co-sponsors in the Senate. That's a pretty big number in the Senate to have that kind of support. So I think there's a very realistic possibility we can get that done. So that's one thing I'm going to focus pretty aggressively on. Another thing is there's a new committee being stood up in the House of Representatives that has to do with the modernization of Congress. That's good. You know, this was an initiative that now Speaker Pelosi led with, and, you know, so credit where credit's due. I think it's a good thing. I think most Republicans are supporting that. We voted for that provision in the rules package to stand up that committee, so we can reevaluate, you know, the way Congress does business and what we can do to bring it into the 21st century. So a couple of things you'll see on the horizon, I think, once we get past this current issue with the government shutdown.
So let's talk a little bit about that, but way of changing the rules and the modernization of Congress. How would you envision that, or what's kind of there by way of the specific changes that Congress would go through if this passes?
Well, it's, for one thing, the day-to-day up there is, it could very well be made more productive and with some simple changes. For example, if you said, we're going to have committee hearings at a set time, doesn't matter what the committee is, but there'll be no committee hearings that go beyond 12 noon. And so then you break an hour for lunch, and then you come in and you do voting and debate on the floor. How many times have you seen, watched on C-SPAN when people are debating bills and they're debating to an empty chamber? And so you've got members that are, you know, maybe they're in a committee hearing somewhere. Maybe they're, you know, who knows where they are, but they're not on the floor. And so what does that debate amount to? It amounts to nothing but a show. And how are you ever going to change anybody's mind? Now, the reality is, if you were present for House debate, and the, you know, we're debating provisions for legislation in a full House and people are hearing it, you actually have an opportunity to maybe change people's minds. But you can't do it if they're not there. And so people walk into the chamber for a series of votes without having any idea what was said during debate. And so you're basically making decisions on those bills purely on voting recommendations, either that staff has reviewed the amendment to the amendment or an amendment to a proposed law or the actual underlying bill itself, without necessarily having read or even heard the debate in question. And so things like that, some schedule changes, could make a difference in the way people conduct themselves up there, and also could improve the comedy, not C-O-M-E-D-Y, but comedy of the institution. And the other thing is using technology to a greater advantage. For example, being able to vote remotely. Why that matters is because there are times in everybody's life when you might need to be away. Maybe you've had a death in the family. Maybe you've got, a health issue. I know that in a previous Congress, I think not this last one, but the previous Congress, the ranking member, DeFazio, who is now the chairman of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, he had a health issue he had to be home for, couldn't travel. And so we made arrangements for him to Skype into a hearing so that he could give his opening statements and hear testimony from witnesses and things of that nature. Well, why would we not take advantage of the technology that we have today to be able to do those things, to allow members to address personal issues at home while still being able to do their job? So that means they're not necessarily going to have to miss votes. I'm not saying that you want to take advantage of that or make a habit of it. Certainly there would be some provisions in there whereby you would request permission to do that, and where your party leadership would recognize that you have maybe a death in the family or an illness, maybe you've had a knee replacement or something like that or something. But this would still allow you to participate and do your job as a representative without having to physically be present. And so there's some things like that are going to be talked about, and I think certainly the technology lends itself to those types of improvements.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joining me here on KASU. Let's talk a little bit about the government shutdown. I know that both sides right now are kind of dug in. We're in the longest shutdown in history. Is there an end in sight? What do you think is going to do to break this?
Well, I hope there's an end in sight. It's really quite simple. In fact, I don't mean to sound flippant about this dollar figure, but $5 billion is a pretty small figure, a pretty small price to pay for national security. And also, considering most of these members in question, particularly Chuck Schumer, but Nancy Pelosi as well, have voted for this numerous times. They have made impassioned speeches on the floor talking about how important it was for us to secure our southern border. And now all of a sudden it has become an issue of, well, we're willing to secure the southern border if anybody else but President Trump asks. If it's President Trump, then no, we can't go along with that. So then you have to start questioning the sincerity, the earnestness of these two individuals. If this really just becomes about trying to block President Trump and what might be perceived as a win for him because he campaigned aggressively on this issue, that's number one. But number two, what do we have if we don't have borders? If we don't have borders, we don't have a country. And I think it's, the argument's been made. I've said it for years. The president said it in a speech earlier last week. we don't lock our doors at night because we hate the people on the outside. We lock our doors at night because we love the people on the inside. It's our job to take care of the people that we love. And the extended family that is our country, we should have locks on our doors. We should have a secure perimeter. And I'm saying, yes, we should have doors and allow people to come in, but we need to know who's coming in, when they're coming in, and what their plan is when they're here. Are they coming here to secure employment? Or are they coming here to try and be citizens? We need to know one of those two things. And the doors need to be marked clearly. Are you coming here to work? Or are you coming here to try and be a U.S. citizen? And then the other argument is, look, if you're coming to the United States because you're trying to escape persecution or any kind of political climate that is problematic for you or whatever, why would you come to our border waving the flag of your national country as if that's your sovereign concern, is maintaining your own cultural integrity with no interest at all in assimilation here in the United States. If it were me, I'd be waving the American flag to show, hey, I want to come and embrace the American dream. I want to come and become a productive American citizen. And look, I understand that you have your heritage and all that kind of stuff, but if the conditions are that bad, why would you want to bring those conditions with you into our country? And the flag represents that. The flag of, for example, Honduras, when the caravan made its way up here, they led the charge with their flags out front. That, to me, seems hostile. Even though they're claiming that they were leaving persecution and seeking asylum, they had to go through two countries to get to the United States, which is also a violation of international law. And so I question the motives there, that there's not a political motive in mobilizing these individuals. I have been to those countries, and I interact with the leaders of those countries and the ambassadors, and I know the conditions there are certainly not the most desirable, and individuals there are under a lot of pressure from gangs like MS-13 and the 18th Street Gang and others, and cartels and things like that, most certainly. But there's a way to go about this. Mexico even offered those countries asylum and jobs, and they declined. They went back to their home country, or some of them stayed up around the border to try and come through and be adjudicated here in the United States. The point is, the original question is, how do we get this government shutdown stopped? It's recognizing those facts. And Secretary Nielsen came into the White House, to the Situation Room, with Nancy Pelosi present, along with Chuck Schumer and, of course, the Republican leadership. And Nancy Pelosi refused to hear anything Secretary Nielsen said, because if she hears the facts, then she is aware of how bad the situation is. The truth is, she is aware, but she doesn't want to be able to have someone point to the fact that she was briefed. She doesn't want to be briefed, because that puts her in a position of having to either decline those facts or recognize that they're true. In either case, that does not square with her base. And so this has become an issue of her, a legacy of her speakership, that she's kowtowing to an extreme left-wing element in Washington Democrats, people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib and some others that are new faces up there that are driving this left-wing agenda.
Do you think that a national emergency will be called?
Well, I mean, that's certainly a provision at the disposal of the president if he chooses to do that. We've seen it before, where there's been a national emergency declared. I think he's got the authority to reopen the government under those circumstances. And I wouldn't have a problem with him doing that. I'm not sure that we necessarily need to go that route right now, but it's a tool in the tool shed. If the president decides to utilize that, well, it could happen very quickly, I think. We're now a couple of days into, about 3 days into, not being paid. That 25% of the federal workforce that's been furloughed, just a reminder, 75% of the government has been funded. It's 25% that haven't been, and those furloughed workers are starting to feel the pressure, and I would like to see that resolved. If it means that we have to take, rely on the president for administrative action, executive action, as long as it's constitutional, I'm okay with it. We've seen emergencies declared in the past that did not, in my opinion, pass constitutional muster with regard to the action taken after the declaration was made. For example, DACA. I don't believe the DACA declaration on the part of the president was appropriate. And it's created a whole lot of problems, and I would say unforeseen problems, but I think these problems were entirely predictable by the action that the president took, President Obama. And so, you want to be, and that's why I think President Trump is taking his time and making sure that he's being given, good legal review, good legal counsel, and that the law is being reviewed, make sure that he does it right.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll be talking to you here real soon. But thanks for your time this morning.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. It's 8:34. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU.